When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
In the wake of last week's captivating episode, where we were treated to Barb Allen's inspiring presentation, today's installer promises an engaging and thought-provoking discussion. Our facilitator, Madison Hull, skillfully guides us through a conversation that promises to be both enlightening and impactful. As we gather around the virtual table, each panel member brings a unique perspective shaped by their specific backgrounds and experiences. Their collective strength and unwavering enthusiasm fuel this critical discourse on women in the construction industry. Join us for this special episode as we explore the challenges, triumphs, and aspirations of women who are reshaping the construction landscape. Their voices matter, and their contributions are vital for fostering positive change. So settle in, grab your hard hat, and let's dive into today's empowering conversation.
So our conversation partners for this session, beginning with Cynthia Grant from DC5. Woo-woo. Cynthia. Cynthia is a commercial painter and has been a member of the IUPAT for 18 years. She currently serves in District Council 5 as a labor representative and member of the International Women's Committee since 2018. In the same year, she initiated the DC5 Committee, the DC5 Women's Committee, and continues to lead as its chair. Cynthia has played a pivotal role in the growth of her local Women's Committee, and most recently led the IUPAT Women's Committee at the Tradeswomen Build Nations Conference, which had the largest constituency to date. So kudos to you on that, sister. Next, we have Aaron O'Brien Hoffman. Aaron is District Council 21's Director of Training and Education. She previously served as a commercial paint coordinator and commercial paint instructor starting in 2017. She has been a member of the IUPAT since 2005, where she advanced in her field as a commercial painter. She started the DC21 Philadelphia Women's Committee in 2020 and still serves as its chair today. Erin serves on the International Women's Committee and drives us in a way only a badass woman from Philly can do. To offer the perspective as a labor leader and male ally, DC16 Business Manager Secretary Treasurer Robert Williams. Robert Williams is a third-generation painter with 25 years in the industry. He started his career running commercial and industrial projects in Northern California. Over the last 11 years, Robert has been instrumental in the growth and success of workers in the crafts of the IUPAT. He is a leader committed to changing the culture and one of my mentors. To bring the perspective from the owner and contractors, Doreen Bartoldas has had a distinguished career in civil and environmental engineering and construction management spanning over 45 years. She has managed a wide range of construction contracts from $1 million to $1.4 billion in value. Doreen holds a Bachelor of Science in Civil and Environmental Engineering from Polytech Institute of New York University, and an MBA in Sustainable Business from Green Mountain College. She is a registered professional engineer in New York and a certified construction manager. Doreen has also made significant contributions to advancing opportunities for women in the construction industry, notably serving as the president of NAWIC, National Association of Women in Construction. Welcome. It's my 10th day in Vegas. I'm dehydrated. So let's begin. Cynthia, progress on which rung do you feel will make the most impact?
Yeah, I think the most impact will be done at the slippery, the unconscious biases. The unconscious bias that says women can't do this work or don't want to do this work. Women do want to do this work. Mm-hmm. And we want to do it without the bullshit. We want to do it without the harassment. And I think all work is hard work, whether you're standing at a grocery checkout or you're caring for children or elderly. It's all hard work. And so I think the way that we get past that is just the opportunity for women to prove themselves.
Erin, how about you?
For me, it's the broken rung. That old language, that old mindset. I oftentimes get calls from my contractors, and they're very comfortable with me. Yo, Err, I need a guy. He's got to be this tall. He weighs this much. I need him to be able to paint steel at Lincoln Financial, and I also need him to have no tattoos from the elbows down because I want to put him in the corridor of a hospital. And I say, I got a guy. It's a girl. And then I hear crickets. And then they say, okay, Err. And then 2 weeks later, I always get that phone call that says, Erin, I'm sorry, she's great. I know. Mm-hmm. So we're here, and we need everyone, including our contractors, to embrace that.
Absolutely. I love how you turn that into a how and have the conversation, and this is who's coming. Fantastic. How about you, Doreen?
Yes, for me, I agree with Cynthia. It's a slippery slope, slippery ladder. It's the potential, the unconscious bias that I'm remembering is the potential versus experience. When I was at mid-level and looking to work big jobs, now you heard in my thing, $1 million to $1.4 billion. I didn't just jump to do that. I did a lot of projects in between. But when I was asking to run big projects, I was doing really well as a resident engineer, and I was like, I can run a big project. They're like, no, you can't. You don't have the experience. I'm like, well, how did that guy get the experience? So I just had to keep pushing. But I was doing everything right. You know, I was doing everything more so or double the guys were doing, and I had to wait. I had to wait my turn. I had to push. And I think the $1.4 billion job, the reason I got that was because I had to do a presentation. So the owner got to meet me in a presentation interview. And I was, you know, and they put me forward, they took a risk, and they put me forward, and I ran a $1.4 billion job just fine. But it's that, and we need women to get to those leadership positions too. That's the slippery part, and that will have the most impact. If we can get women up those rungs and up above, we're gonna have a much better construction industry.
So that housing, the leadership, scaling. Mm-hmm. So let's jump to question number two. Robert, which rung is consistent with your efforts and how have you expanded your approach to improve the results as a business manager?
It would be a combination of the slippery and also the broken rung. So some of the problems that we run into is that unconscious bias is exactly there. And some of the problems that we run into of the broken rung is the oversight. So when there's that unconscious bias that you think somebody can't do it, when you put a microphone or a microscope on somebody and you're watching every little thing that they do, it doesn't matter who it is in this room, you're gonna screw up at some point. Mm-hmm. And so having those conversations intentionally with the contractors of, by the time you give somebody the chance, give them the opportunity to be just like everybody else on the crew, and there is no difference from that. But when we tried to have those conversations, some of the problems we ran into was we're doing it at an open table. People have their own concerns about being made fun of, being ashamed by my own unconscious bias that I vocalize. So one of the things that we did was engage with Barb and have her come in on those one-on-ones with the employers to try to find those issues and items that are deep down inside of where the problems are, and how can we try to help that side of it and be able to bring those opportunities forward.
Perfect. Thank you for that. So part of this panel is to really give the audience that tactical how, right? We've talked about the why for the 5 years, and we've expanded 1%. So some of the next questions are really focused on the how. So starting with Cynthia, what resistance stands out for you at your position, and how have you addressed solutions or practices in your organization to respond to that resistance?
Yeah, I think the biggest resistance that we find is contractors not wanting to hire women. Specifically if they've had an issue prior to, and really kind of identifying that as, basically if you have an issue with a man on the job, they're not gonna never hire another man. So I think the same rule should apply for anybody. Mm-hmm. So just kind of educating our contractors on, you know, things like the rungs of the ladder, the unconscious biases and things like that. Also implementing mentorship programs and leadership development for all of our folks, including staff, superintendents, and trying to move away from that antiquated generational, you know, idealism that this sort of work is men's work. Mm-hmm. Anymore, all work is for everybody. And, you know, whether it's non-traditional, and I've shared this story before, but when I first became a rep, I was sitting on the front porch with my mom, and she said, a couple of generations ago, all work, you know, all work is non-traditional because a couple of generations ago, women didn't work. And so that really hit home with me, whether you're talking about schools or boardrooms or classrooms, you know, so.
Erin, do you have anything to add to that from your experience in your position as far as the resistance and any solutions or practices that you've been able to implement?
At District Council 21, we have found that some of the best practices is really empowering women, and we do that through pre-apprenticeship programs like WINC, Women in Non-Traditional Careers, where we teach the MC3 curriculum that Sean talked about a little bit earlier, and we really gear women up to be a success in a registered apprenticeship program. Mm-hmm. And through that work, we definitely have contractor buy-in. All of our contractor associations absolutely know what WINC is. And you know, and they know that the women that are applying are rock stars, and they're hiring them.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest catalysts for change is the pre-apprenticeship pipeline, and your model is one of the best, so thanks for sharing that.
Well done.
Robert, so I'm gonna pass that one to you. I think you kind of started that conversation with maybe some of the solution and practices that you're implementing in DC 16, yeah. As far as working with Barb. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely. So as we go through, we're doing similar things of that pre-apprenticeship pipeline of empowering people to understand what they're coming into, make sure they're finding that track that they enjoy. Because somebody that wants to be a painter might start off going in as, let's say, a laborer or somebody else, and then they realize that they don't like it. All of a sudden, you have that fallout. So going the pre-apprenticeship route, you get somebody trying out the different items and figuring out what they enjoy. And then the other side of that is exactly that. The recruitment side works extremely well. In my opinion, the IUPAT does a fantastic job of recruitment, but the retention side is our problem. Getting that intentional conversation with the employers of, this is what happens when X goes on, this is how we go through this process, this is what we do all the way across the board, is ultimately what's gonna change us and gonna change the culture, in my opinion.
Yeah, you hit something really important on that how, right? And that conversation with the employers. And I know that we have some of it in the audience, so thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
So we're gonna switch to question number 4. Doreen, tell us about the most significant challenge that you can recall facing when you entered the industry, and what individuals can do to reduce or eliminate that challenge for women entering now.
Well, Sean helped me this morning. I actually, when I thought about this question, there's so many. I have a long career, and I started a long time ago. There were lots of challenges when I started. I didn't have an education right away. I went to school at night. But I also had a daughter at 20, and I was a single mom. So childcare was tough, daycare, et cetera. So I am very hopeful hearing what I heard this morning. But that was a barrier for me to figure out what was my next step in my career. I wanted to be in construction. I had talent for construction. I was doing drafting. I was doing estimating. Then eventually I was doing surveying. I had an opportunity to become a surveying, go into the union survey as a union surveyor. But I couldn't do it because I had to worry about getting my daughter into daycare or to school. So that changed my trajectory quite a bit. I didn't do so bad, so, but that was a real challenge. Childcare was a real challenge for me. And individuals?
Yeah.
Sean was talking this morning about being more flexible as the organizations are doing, but individuals have to be supportive. Barb said before, like, you have to go pick up that sick kid. Yes, you have to go pick up that sick kid, but you know what, there's guys that have to do that too. So just the individuals can help by supporting, being part of a team, giving people some grace, some flexible hours. There's a lot of things that can be done now by individuals to help people with childcare.
Yeah. appreciate that. Aaron, do you have anything to add to that, especially being at the apprenticeship in your position?
Well, I was going to say a lot of my experiences kind of piggyback off of Barb's, you know, and I also resonate. I mean, off of Doreen, but I also resonate with a lot of what Barb talked about in the beginning. About like falling into that same mindset, right? Like to fit in. And so like I can remember getting that phone call like in the kindergarten, my son broke his arm and like I literally was like frozen. I wasn't leaving. And they're like, what are you doing? You have to go. I'm like, oh, I can. And my kids berate me because I dropped them off at a lot of the crazy ladies' houses in the neighborhood, but we made it. But the fact is that we have to make a more inclusive atmosphere mm-hmm. for the apprentices and journey women that are here now mm-hmm. So that this can be feasible. And not just for women, for everyone, you know what I mean? Because if we're being really transparent, we have a lot of apprentices and journey workers that are single dads too. And so for everybody, these topics really matter.
Cynthia, I'm going to ask the next question to you. Tell us about the most significant challenge that you recall facing when you entered the industry and what organizations can do to reduce or eliminate the challenge for women entering now. So instead of individuals, organizations.
Yeah, so I think the biggest challenge for me early on in the first several years was just the fact that I was always the first to get laid off, no matter what. I was, you know, the girl on the job. And so it was never about my skill or my work ethic, my any of that. So I think the biggest thing is for us as a union, as IUPAT, is really educating our members from day one, from the time they come in, and allowing them to know what resources they have as members. And then also encouraging the training aspect of things so that, you know, women and all of our new members, actually, that have all the training and the more tools in their toolbox. Mm-hmm.
Doreen, I'm going to pitch it to you with the flip side of that and the contractor perspective as far as an organization.
When I think about organizations, there's, companies like the ACE industry, which I worked in. I worked for Jacobs and Arcadis, the big construction management firms. And what they can do for challenges is policies and... let me go back to that. Am I answering my own question from before or a new one?
So it's the same question instead of individuals, organizations. But how can organizations help?
Okay. And then the other organization I think about, which is very close to my heart, is NAWIC. And one of the things that organization has been doing is adding like that training. So the organizations with the pre-apprenticeship programs and the training programs that can help people move into construction. We have NEF has certification programs. I'm a member of the CMAA, my certified construction manager. That came from there to educate me to move forward as a construction manager. Those programs are excellent to help with, and that gets you over the hump, because that's what I did to go onto those big projects was go get a certified. I checked every box I could. I also have like a DBIA, and I have a LEED GA, and I also have ENVSP. I just don't put all those initials on my thing. So those kind of things that kind of help people build confidence and move forward, organizations can help with that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Appreciate that. And the common thread of pre-apprenticeship.
Yes.
So we're going to dive a little bit deeper, and we heard our movement in the last 5 years with 1%. So how did I lose my place? You told me I was going to do that.
Nobody cares. They don't know.
Robert, what has your district council started doing with signatory contractor partners and field decision makers that is bringing more women into our trades?
Well, we're very proud to say that since 2019, we have tripled our numbers. So we've tripled the amount of women. But I'm also ashamed to say the fact that it only went from 70 to 220 out of 12,000 members. So it's shameful in the fact of where we're at. So the biggest thing is that educational piece. You know, as we're talking about the conversations on the job sites, the conversations with the employers, it ultimately comes down to everything that's changing in the industries, not just in construction, but all of the just workforce in general is just the soft skill side of it. You know, you're hearing other people speak about it today on substance abuse and mental health disorders. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're talking about that, the fact that we're trying to give grace to our partner that's next to us, the fact that we're trying to help out each other across the board and just actually care about the other person. You know, we talk about changing the culture, just those small shifts of just showing somebody that you actually care and that you actually want to see them succeed has been huge for us. It's nowhere near where we want to be. That's why we're engaging with third-party people, our organizations to come in and actually show us where our problems are, because of the fact that by standing there looking at yourself, you're never going to be able to be as honest as you should be with yourself. So by bringing the third party coming in, having that discussion, having that discovery, it's given us that ability to be able to help people in a different way.
Very good. Thank you, Robert. Aaron, can you expand on that?
Repeat.
Yep. What has your district council started doing with signatory contractor partners and field decision makers that is bringing more women into our trades?
So engagement. And so, you know, they're all a part of our pre-apprenticeship programs. They are, you know, they're present at our graduation ceremonies. They're a part of all of this. And you know, we've also, we look to empower women. So like, even like our women's committee, like we meet, you know, before our council meeting, and now women are becoming delegates, and when you have to like see her to be her, you know? And so that's how I really believe that a lot of our numbers have increased, because of all of our new female participation and women that are getting opportunities to move up that ladder, mm-hmm. broken, sticky, or slippery. They're moving up. We're here.
Yeah, no, so I'm curious, that engagement is so important. So in your council, who's driving that? Is that in your purview? Who's engaging the contractors in the field? Or is it a team effort? Has it expanded out with your
It has success? Expanded to be a team effort. I don't want to think, but probably because of some of my bossy attitude was the original driving force. But I'm lucky enough to work with an amazing group of men who absolutely get behind me in all of these efforts.
Awesome.
Yes.
Cynthia, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, just, you know, engagement is the hugest piece of this. And so, like, just through our labor management partnerships, monthly meetings, DC5 actually has a large number of women on staff. So I think that's huge. Again, if you can't see it, you can't be it. You know, working with our core, the pre-apprenticeship programs, and engaging with our contractors on the work that we are doing as leadership.
Thank you for that. So some of these are a little redundant, but we want to hit it a couple times so people really leave here with items that they can maybe implement or come and ask us more questions on. So Aaron, as an organization, we've moved from 4% women to 5% women since 2019. Your district councils realize the largest influx. Can you articulate how you have tackled change in your district council?
We are intentional about hiring women. So I have the autonomy as the director of training, the previous, you know, commercial paint coordinator instructor, to be part and parcel to a lot of that decision making. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm hiring a guy, I'm hiring a girl. And that's just the way that it is. And if somebody wants to come find me, they can. And also, there's so many things, it's so multifaceted, you know, things like childcare. So we have women that have childcare subsidy in Philadelphia, it's called CCIS. And unfortunately, you have to have a job already in order to obtain it. Yeah. So I fudge CCIS documents all over Philadelphia. And I say that you know, they have a job from this date, because women, that's what they need in order to get there, right? Yeah. And we just have to be completely, completely intentional. There is absolutely nothing more that fires me up than women getting opportunities in the Philadelphia Union Building Trades and at District Council 21. And so whatever it takes, I'm there for it.
Awesome.
A little unorthodox of a director of training, but like, I'm on the bus, I'm at the job site, I'm at the other training centers, we're doing this hands-on work, and I love it.
Yeah, and I will say, and it works, so I wanna ask everybody in the audience to write that model down, no matter what your system is at your district council, one woman, one male, one woman, one male, because one of the biggest barriers is the hunt trait, right? And we hear that across the country. I hear that in district council. When somebody comes in, they take a test and they get a list of contractors and say, go ahead, go hustle work, right? Erin's adopted the model and she's changed the culture because she's gone outside of the box with her power and with her strength. And the numbers show it, right? Her district council has the largest number of women in the IUPAT outside of Canada. So if you want to know a how, that's a how. So thank you for sharing that. Cynthia, do you want to expand on that?
I don't.
No? Just drop the mic. Robert, what success have you had that proves a particular rung exists but can be restored?
That's a good question. Let me think about that. So I would say it's ultimately that missing rung, just thinking that people aren't there and aren't available for the work and that a woman doesn't want to go into the field. The continuation of the pre-apprenticeship programs is just continuing to show that they are there, that bias is that thought process of women don't want to get into the field is completely false because of the fact anybody in the world wants an opportunity to be able to prove themselves. And by having the pre-apprenticeship programs and the relationships with the communities, that's continuing to show that. And then we have some business reps that do a fantastic job of getting down to those pre-apprenticeship programs, getting in the process, finding out exactly who wants to go into our trades, and then working with our contractors to get them into positions and then supporting them all the way through. So it's been a fantastic model on that side.
Absolutely, and I appreciate you recognizing just the missing rung, yeah. Right? I think that's a huge catalyst, especially in your position and as an ally. Yeah. Cynthia, do you want to expand on this one?
Sure, yeah. So I think mine, for me, it's the broken rungs and, you know, just that this work is too hard. And all, again, I will say it every time, all work is hard work. And I think the how on that one is just kind of moving away from the idea that construction is just for men. And that I think education for our members and for contractors in mentorship, again, just mentorship. And we can teach it at an apprenticeship level. We need contractor partners to teach it at a journey level and journeyman upgrade level. We can force it, again, at the apprenticeship level. We can't force them to come in on Saturdays and take a mentorship class. And so we would need the contractor partners for that.
Appreciate that. Another common thread, contractor partnership. Yeah. Thanks for putting that out there. Question 9. Barb, what is one recommendation that would help labor and management work together to make steady and meaningful progress for women?
I think it's training. I think it's coming together on training, whether, like, take unconscious bias, for example. Unconscious bias training, a lot of the contractors, especially the big contractors, they already have unconscious bias training, but the majority of them are check-the-box training. And workers don't want to leave the field to go in for a training anyway, and then they sit in a training and they don't really grasp what it is, and then they go back to work. And if somebody says, what was that about? I don't know, something about women, right? Like, it needs to be something. I think that labor management has a really cool opportunity to help develop a really robust unconscious bias training that could be in partnership with contractors that, I mean, it could even be taught in the apprenticeship programs. It can be part of the apprenticeship program. It can be part of contractor meetings where it's more than check the box so that people actually have an opportunity to say, I disagree or I don't understand that. And it becomes a conversation instead of just being told information that now they've been there, they don't have to do it again for a year.
Yeah. I think the being in person and be able to ask that question and expand on that is so essential to the change.
Yep.
So thanks.
It needs to be a conversation. Yeah. People need to feel comfortable to say, I don't get what you're saying, or I disagree. Okay, fine. Tell me why. Mm-hmm. Let's have the conversation.
Right. How many have memorized the click safety, ABAB, on the harassment, right?
Yeah.
So to your point, it's to change the culture, we got to change the culture.
That's right.
So Robert, can you expand on that as well?
I would fully agree with that, that just the having the conversations and bringing people in to actually take the training instead of just going through the motions is vital. And the other side of that I would also say is don't be afraid of making the mistakes. I mean, from the ally side. So as we go through our careers, there's been many times where we've made mistakes on job sites, you know, just like you said, whether it was complacency or just ignorance to it and not stepping up and saying the right thing. Or as myself, I ran large crews for a lot of my career, and when I would have women on the crew with me, I was taught as a young man that I always protected my sister, my mother, and everything else. And so I took that as that's what I needed to do to help that person get to the end of their career. Ultimately, I screwed up by not teaching them every aspect of the trade. I recognize that piece in myself, and I'm not afraid to have the conversation and recognize my faults of what I personally did instead of always shoveling the blame or the intent on the other person that they didn't live up to it. Because I could have said, well, she just couldn't keep up, she couldn't do this. It wasn't her fault, it was my fault for not training and getting her to that level of what I would expect from everybody on the crew and that expectation level of everybody on the crew, and I failed my crew at that.
But we so love you for that recognition and changing the culture now, so thank you for that. Doreen, what role do you feel women as individuals need to play in building a more equitable ladder to entry?
I can see it happening here. So that slippery rung where you get women to leadership, when women get to power, like Erin, there's so much more we can do. We can go back and help repair those rungs. We can go have those conversations in those management positions. So when I got to that really big project, there was lots of people there. It was very diverse. And some of the things I did was walk around with the health and safety person, because I was in charge of the project. And we had a joint venture. Skanska was the contractor. So we had a partnering. We put in being equitable to everyone on the project, make sure everybody came away with good things on their resume with the project. The other thing, walk around the site, make sure the bathrooms were clean. We went into the shanties, make sure there were no naked ladies on the thing or words or anything. We luckily, New York City does have a EEO law, so that we had to be compliant with that, and we had to report on that. I went out and talked to the women who are on the site, who are working the site, and let them know that I was there if they needed anything. I didn't avoid them. I made sure I connected with them. So there's a lot we can do. And also, when I got to the power where I was hiring and firing, I pulled out those women's resumes and said, let's talk to these women. And much more, many women get hired that way. One of the things women have a problem with is singing their own praises. So I get a resume of a man, wow, full of stuff. Get a resume of a woman, and no wonder they're being tossed aside. There's only like one sentence. I'd have to read between the lines or get them in and interview them and find out they did exactly what I needed them to do. So that's how we get. So when we get to that power position, we can turn around and bring more women up the ladder.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Erin, do you have anything to expand on that?
Just, to be an absolute cheerleader for women. You know what I mean? Barb spoke in the beginning about, like almost avoiding women. And I think that any woman that's truly has enough grit to be here, and to be in construction, if they're really being honest, can resonate with what Barb said. And the truth is that we have to adopt that mindset of being a cheerleader for other women. Mm-hmm. And like everybody, like, women need other women. Like, they just do, you know what I mean? And we need our male allies, too. But we just have to be cheerleaders. And, and I think it's important that we literally pound the pavement through all of these efforts that we're speaking of to increase those numbers.
Absolutely. Well said, Erin. Barb, what role do you feel men as individuals need to play in building a more equitable ladder to entry?
What we need from you men is what I call front stage support. Too many times women get backstage support. When, take for example, we're on a job site and somebody says something inappropriate, we know it's inappropriate, she lets it go, you let it go, you walk away, and later you say to her, sorry about him, he's kind of an asshole. We need you to say it in front of him, not to us back in the back. It happens in boardrooms, it happens on the job site. I mean, you could have a woman on the job site may have a great idea. Hey, let's try it this way. Crickets. And they go back to doing what they were doing. If you also thought it was a good idea, let's say that. We need you to say, actually, I think Madison has a good idea. Let's try this.
instead of later going back around and saying, hey, I liked your idea, sorry nobody else did. We need that front stage support. We need you to say, show everyone else, really. It's not us. Show everyone else that you believe in us.
Robert, can you close us out on that one, on this question?
I would say the exact same thing, is that too many times that, especially in the construction world or a lot of different, just in general, a lot of times to that point that I might think your idea was great, and as a woman you say the idea, and then you shift the concept, and nobody says anything, but then ultimately it becomes the practice that's going on because I was the one that said it instead of Barb. And ultimately it comes back down to supporting each other and showing that support of if we're in a meeting and somebody says something inappropriate to somebody that is on my staff, I need to be that person to stand up and speak on their behalf. That as the ally in the room or as somebody with the eyes on you, you need to be the one pushing forward to make sure that everybody feels supported and everybody feels protected and those ideas can come forward instead of letting those good ideas go into the waste bucket because of the fact that we just weren't open-minded enough or strong enough in the moment and we were the weak one in that position.
Mm-hmm. I think it also parlays in just to retention, right? It builds the trust with the workforce, the contractors, and within the union. Like, we hear it, see something, say something, right? And so thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. So we're going to jump to one of my favorite questions. If you could say one thing to this audience that you feel would make a beneficial impact, what would it be? Cynthia?
Diversity and inclusion are not just buzzwords. They're essential ingredients for success in the construction industry. We don't want to be just a box, the checked box anymore. So,
Aaron.
So this is construction, and there's we have a group of contractors and folks from labor here, and everything in construction boils down to dollars and cents. And if we can remove some of these biases that we have, everyone can be more productive at their job. So rather than a woman having to do all that work to prove, you know, that she can do this, maybe you can allow her to do her job, whether that woman be a rank and file member or that woman be a staff member on your team, and allow her to be more productive by working on some of your unconscious biases, because at the end of the day, it's dollars and cents, and it's man hours. And if you want to see an uptick in that, if some of us women up on this stage are able to move the dial with increasing our women participation numbers, just think about what we could increase if we just had the autonomy to do our jobs.
Yes.
Very well said.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one. Robert?
I just want to piggyback onto what Aaron said, and that is, you know, women make really good leaders if mm-hmm. given the chance, mm-hmm. you know, and so we strive as women, and I know that I can speak for the women up on here and, you know, all the women that I know in the industry, and that is we eventually get to a certain point in our careers. We were discussing this at dinner last night, where it's what's next, and I know it was for me, we all called it something different, but you get to the journeyman level, and at some point you say, what's next? And what's next would be foreman, and then what's next is superintendent, and then potentially you get into some sort of leadership role, or you're teaching safety classes, or you're, you know, moving up in your company where you become an estimator. And so given the chance, women thrive as if they're supported. So,
thank you for adding that. Robert?
So I'm going to go a little bit different route, and it's going to be a little bit of a challenge to everybody in the room. It's stop being a coward. I spoke about it a second ago. Stop being afraid of change. Stop being afraid of trying to change a culture. If we're going to stand in a room at a general convention and we're going to say that we're going to do something, actually stand up and do it. We do that too often, that we say we want to do something. We do exactly what we're saying we shouldn't be doing with the click safety and just checking a box. We do it too goddamn often. We've got to be the ones that are making that change, whether we're talking about women in construction, whether we're talking about the diversity, equity, and inclusion, whether we're talking about mental health and safety, whether we're talking about substance abuse. The only way something happens is if we start being brave enough to open ourselves up to what our honest issues are. Mm-hmm. Whether it's I have an unconscious bias that I have to recognize, whether it's the historical practices, whatever it is, we've got to be honest enough with ourselves to have that conversation so we can make the shift in the culture to be able to make a difference long term. Otherwise, we're going to be here in 5 more years saying the same things and doing absolutely nothing about it.
Yep. Thank you for that, Robert. Doreen.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yeah, give him
yeah.
a This is one thing I didn't have prepared. I waited for something to come upon me. But I just have to say, I want to thank you for having me here. I've been so impressed. Just I'm learned so much in the last couple of days, what the union is about. I am hopeful and more optimistic now for women in construction because of these conversations that you're having here. So what I will say, though, whatever you do for women, you do for everyone. When you improve it for women in construction, you're improving it for the men in construction. You're making it more inclusive for everyone. There's so much more technology, there's so much more, the lifting of the 80 pounds, whatever. There's so many ways women can get in construction, and men, and minorities, and people who are differently abled, that we can open the doors to so many more people now for construction, and it's such a great career. So just keep that in mind. Anything you do, keep an open mind, think out of the box, like Sean said this morning, and when you improve it for women, you improve it for the whole industry. So, thank you.
Thank you for that. We're going to circle back to where we started. Barb?
I can't promise to just have one.
That's perfect.
So we've talked about male allies, but I want the men in the room to consider a female ally. Because as I've done these interviews that Robert talked about, I have come to find out that there are a lot of company owners who just aren't sure or aren't comfortable asking certain questions. And I'm a resource. These women are resources. Having someone that you can go to, another female, a female in the industry that has the experience with what you have in your head, what you're wrestling with, how to ask a question, or whatever is going on with maybe a female employee or a female in your workforce, if you have a female ally that you can go to that you feel is going to be non-judgmental about the question you have in your head, you are going to get so much out of that. So, men, please find a female ally. Happy to be that for anyone. Something else I want to say. I noticed on the screen there, Dennis did have a static that was for his. I don't know if you have it. If you can put it up, because there was a QR code on there that will lead you to. A summary of the one ladder rungs so that you don't have to remember them all and you can go back and refresh. There's also a QR code on the desk outside. So that's the third thing I would say. You guys, we are going to be out at the desk in the back at the women's, what is it called?
Booth. Network
it's the
hub.
It's the booth.
Place to be.
It's the women's booth. It's the place to be. We would love for you to come tell us like what really resonated with you. Tell us that you disagree with us. Tell us what questions you have. Tell us about a situation that you're going through that you would like a sounding board for. We would love for you to come out and have those conversations with us because that's what we want it to be, a conversation.
Mm-hmm. What a perfect segue. Thank you, Barb. Panelists, thank you so much for being here, all your insight and all your information and your honesty. And everybody here, thank you for being here. Thank you for being interested in this conversation. Thank you for being here to change the culture with us. Please come to our booth and help me and give a round of applause for our panelists.
Thank you for joining us on this journey of empowerment and transformation. Let's continue to build a more inclusive and equitable construction world together.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Soft as Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Soft as Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Soft as Steel podcast with Dennis Duran.
produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.